Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
It was going to be a perfect week in Chicago for political columnists and cartoonists. Barack Obama and the big guy, Joe Biden, in Chicago in the same week. That would be perfect. Obama was here for the groundbreaking of his giant Obama Temple of Adoration and Fealty, and the media naturally drooled over him and wagged their tails and wet themselves like excited puppies. And you should have seen, I hope you saw, Mayor Lori Lightfoot and Governor Pritzker with their masks off, brandishing their fancy shovels, fancy shiny shovels, at the groundbreaking. I was hoping that the Obama machine's anointed mayoral candidate, the White Shadow, Arne Duncan, would get some kind of role. I even texted Valerie Jarrett to ask if he'd have a speaking part, but she didn't respond. Maybe he could have at least served hors d'oeuvres, wearing a little white jacket like a waiter. That would have been nice. I just hope there's a wing in the Obama temple dedicated to Obama using the CIA and the FBI against his political enemies, because if that's not Chicago way, what is? And maybe a special hall or room dedicated to how President Obama healed the planet, even though he ignored Chicago while he was in the White House. And Joe, the big guy Biden, in the now-confirmed Hunter Biden emails, was also scheduled in Chicago on Wednesday to talk about his vaccine mandate. I support vaccines. I think everyone should get one. But here's what I don't like. I don't like the government hammer crushing anyone who doesn't like it. Now, before you accuse me of not thinking big guy happy thoughts, here's one. Imagine Joe Biden on a horse at the wide-open southern border. You know, the one that he made sure was wide open. Not a real horse. That's crazy. He could hurt himself. He's the president. He's not a rider. He's not Clint Eastwood. Not Robert Duvall. I don't think he could ride a horse unless it's outside the supermarket. You know, the kind of plastic horse that you put a couple of quarters into and it rocks and it rocks. And then mommy puts you in the car seat and straps you in the van and drives you home so you can have some ice cream if you were good. But apparently Joe Biden, the big guy, is an expert on horse riding. And he wants the Border Patrol agents, many of them Latinos, with the reins in their hands trying to drive illegal immigrants back across the river, to be punished. The big Democratic lie is that they had whips, that they were like slave masters or something, whipping the slaves. But they didn't have whips. They ride horses with reins to control them so that the horses don't crush the illegal aliens trying to cross the border illegally. That would be a bad picture if a horse crushed a Haitian. But Biden doesn't care, so the big guy shamelessly lies, like Maxine Waters lied, like he lied when he said Romney would put y'all back in chains. And now he wants to use his government hammer on his own border patrol.
Mr. President, you said on the campaign trail that you were going to restore the moral standing of the U.S., that you were going to immediately end Trump's assault on the dignity of immigrant communities. Given what we saw at the border this week, have you failed in that promise? And this is happening under your watch. Do you take responsibility for the chaos that's unfolding?
Of course I take responsibility. I'm president, but it was horrible what to see, as you saw. To see people treated like they did, horses barely running them over, people being strapped. It's outrageous. I promise you, those people will pay. They will be an investigation underway now, and there will be consequences. There will be consequences. It's an embarrassment, but it's beyond an embarrassment. It's dangerous. It's wrong. It sends the wrong message around the world. It sends the wrong message at home. It's simply not who we are.
National Border Patrol Council Vice President Art Del Cueto pushed back, saying they weren't whips, they don't carry whips, it was all approved training.
People need to put pride aside and realize what works and what doesn't work. What was working under the last administration is definitely something that can stop the flow now, and they need to realize that. We're losing agents. The morale is down. Agents are quitting currently. You know, they have the mandate for the COVID vaccine, so a lot of the agents are choosing, you know, to leave the job. All the while, we're allowing illegal individuals to enter this country that have not received any vaccines, not just the COVID, but the regular vaccines that many of us receive as child. And that's part of the problem. And then, you know, this agency and this administration, they haven't done much to defend agents that are out there. You look at the pictures of, you know, the horse patrol. What they were doing out there was within policy. They were not whipping anyone. They don't carry whips. They don't get assigned whips. What they do is a training technique that has been shown to them to make sure that no one takes over their horse. It was to protect the horse, to protect the rider, and to protect the individual that was trying to cause chaos and knock down that rider from that horse. So they twirl the reins to protect everything and make sure everything's done correctly.
But does media care? So do we have a border or don't we? No border, sanctuary city laws, no sanctuary city laws, laws in federal conflict with laws in Chicago. It all gets quite confusing. Then you add the sex traffickers and the cartels and the fentanyl coming in over what used to be a border. And then if you come here illegally and got drunk and drove a car and killed someone on the road and he was from Chicago, will you still get to post bail and flee justice and run home to Mexico or wherever you come from? That happened to Denny McCann. I wrote about him. I met his brother, Brian. We talked about it. And he told me about this guy, Patrick Dickinson, that we have on today, a longtime INS agent, supervisor in Chicago, now retired. Let's see if he can bring some perspective and non-political analysis to what's going on. And Jeff Carlin is here, executive producer at WGN Radio, my friend, master baker, sadly a lover of cats, and co-host. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist at johncassnews.com. And where are you with Obama breaking ground on his great temple of fealty and adoration? And the big guy Joe Biden not coming to town? And the southern border wide open by design? You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
As promised, we're talking to Patrick Dickinson about the border, about our lack of border, and about the Biden administration and its destruction of the border. He served in the U.S. Army. He graduated in 1985 from college and went into the Army as an intel officer, an airborne ranger, 7 years active, up until about 1992 when he joined the became an immigration officer, the Immigration and Naturalization Service in Boston, and then Chicago, and then it became part of Homeland Security, where he was a supervisor, an investigator. He served overseas for the department as an attaché in Kabul and Tel Aviv. He lives in Illinois, wife and two children. and they live and work downtown. He worked for years on human trafficking, on drugs, on smuggling, on fentanyl at the airports and elsewhere. His name is Patrick Dickinson, and it's our pleasure to have him here on the Chicago Way. He's retired, so he can talk. Hey, Pat.
Good morning, John. Thank you for inviting me on.
So what do you make of the whole thing that's so confusing for so many people, so much information, so much emotion, whips, not whips, reins, not reins? People get lost in the weeds, but what is happening on our border? Do we have one?
Well, the answer is yes, we do have a border. And what I make of it is a disappointment, great disappointment in seeing those that enforce our immigration laws and, you know, border management, all the agencies involved with that. Painful to watch how they've turned into political pawns, in a sense, you know, between any administration that's in charge. And I will say that we have the most professional, especially U.S. Border Patrol on the border, enforcement officers that are there simply to do their jobs. You know, they're very great patriots. They very much love what they do. They're extremely disciplined, and they do not change their behavior depending on who's in charge. They continue to march and protect our borders. So they do the best that they can, especially trying to deter entry into the United States. So the answer is yes, we do have a border. And I'm happy to talk today with you all to perhaps help calm some false notions, and but also perhaps help support those that are down there as well, and not get caught up in the fray and the ruckus that goes on, you know, kind of in the D.C. area.
And this is something that, you know, my whole life, it's always been a conversation piece, you know, and it just seems like it's always been, oh, the border, oh, what are we going to do with the border? And, you know, one side or the other throws a couple $1 million at it, hires a couple thousand people and says, look, we fixed it. And then nothing ever really kind of changes, it seems. You've been involved with it over many years. Has there ever been one thing or maybe a couple of things that were instituted, not instituted, that you think would change things as we know it on the borders?
I think that it's a dynamic. It's a border that certainly has a static line, but it's wide open, thousands of miles from California and not just to Texas. We have Border Patrol units and stations in Florida and Puerto Rico. And then you have your Coast Guard on the coast, and then you have the Border Patrol on the northern border. So as far as what can be done to just one size fits all forever, is never going to exist. And again, I served as a criminal investigator, a special agent that dealt with when people got past the border. And once they're in the interior of the United States, we call that interior enforcement, in large part in our city and urban areas, focusing on crime, criminal actions that are committed by non-U.S. citizens. So that's a full-time industry as well. On the border itself, I've had the opportunity to work with Border Patrolmen, even in attaché capacities overseas. And it's a constant process of analyzing what's in front of you, what are the trends of the time, and dealing with it to the best of your ability, because the resources that you do ask for that perhaps need to be funded or provided by those that lead us in the D.C. capital region, national capital region, may not be as responsive and as quick to help, you know, deal with the crisis. And that's what you see. The Border Patrol knows what's coming. You know, that's what you see on the border when there's large migrant groups that are heading up from Central America, or even this Haitian latest surge that, you know, we watched the earthquake and the collapse of their government, perhaps in the last month, almost like a failed state. These are things that you can kind of predict are going to cause refugees or folks to kind of leave those areas. So the U.S. Border Patrol, again, a law enforcement agency, a border management agency, is not a political entity that just strategizes with, you know, who, what's right, what's wrong. They're there to enforce the laws with the resources they have, to include horse patrol units that they've had for over 100 years that can go somewhere that, you know, mechanized vehicles and even humans can't go. So it's a total force. It's a total concept of dealing with the I don't want to say crisis, but the challenges that are before you in that period of time, and looking out as best you can. So all these things that you hear about Let's deal with the Central American countries. Let's make it so folks don't leave. That's idealistic. We've tried to do that for my entire career and continue to do it. It's necessary. We do that through our Department of State, through our embassies, our consulates, our attaché offices. But the reality is we have a border that is wide open, thousands and thousands of miles, and there is room for walls in certain locations. There is room for horses. There is room for technology and drones, but it requires constant assessment and constant tailoring to your tactics.
And one thing it requires, I think, is an understanding that there is such a thing as the law. And the law does not welcome people breaking it. So if I'm crossing the border and I'm an immigrant son, and I love immigrants, and we came here legally, and my dad had to, in the days when he came after he fought the communists in Greece, he was asked by the federal judge, would you bear arms against your former country for this country, the United States? And he said, yes. It was a hard thing for a man to do after he spent 15 years with a rifle fighting for his country. And he said, yes, I'll fight for this country because I want to be an American, and became an American citizen and all that. So I'm not against immigration, but if you don't have law, if you don't follow the law, how are you expected to have a country? I don't understand how that works. And then throw in this nonsense about the whips and slavery. These guys on the border, the border patrol on the horses, are doing what they were trained to do. Well, you know this, Pat. They were trained to do this. They weren't whipping people like slave masters. They were trying to drive people back across the river. That's their training. What do you make of all the hysteria?
I agree that, you know, we have ports of entry up and down the border. In fact, that's where you see the Haitian camps under the bridges, et cetera, which is horrific in the conditions. Certainly, we're all humane. But, they were being processed. They were being dealt with to the point where I believe, from what I see on the news and media, that it's cleared up in a matter of weeks. So we do need to maintain a sense of law and order for anybody that presents themselves, and deterring people from those illegal entries into, across the border where they don't have any chance of being identified or inspected by an immigration officer is, you know, that purpose is done to defend us. And also the private property owners that are along the border that you hear often about, the ranchers that have cut fences and their animals, you know, basically end up in Mexico, and they lose thousands of dollars. So there's more to the story than just looking as horrific as a snapshot does, which, you know, does not tell the entire story. So the hysteria needs to slow down and calm down. We have a great nation. My mother is a naturalized American citizen as well. And I have a passion and partial to this line of work for that reason as well. I have family, everyone on her side are still in Italy. So I understand what it is to come to the greatest country on earth. But part of that is abiding by the rules and laws that we have in place. The immigration laws are all primarily family-based reunification. You know, so if you get in, you can bring in your wife and kids. You know, we're not trying to destroy families. But then it goes another step. It goes into, you know, taking in cousins or aunts and uncles and stuff. There's a mechanism for that that may take longer or never, depending on the case at hand. It's also employment-based. You know, we want to get skilled workers and unskilled workers. There's a mechanism in place. There's a lot of thumbs in the pie that analyze that, you know, and make recommendations to our leaders in Congress and the administration in charge. So it's a constant balance that's difficult to maintain. When you ignore the, unlawful entries made into the United States. And again, the border is not just the border with Mexico. It's our ports of entry at international airports. I've heard from my many decades and read of immigration enforcement that there are 10 to 15 million folks here that aren't supposed to be, that aren't here with permission. they didn't all cross the border in Mexico. Many of them come right through our Chicago O'Hare airports with visas in hand issued by embassies, U.S. embassies. And they just chose to ignore the law and their agreement and their application to return at the end of their business visit or visit for pleasure. So it's an enormous challenge for whoever, whatever administration is in charge. So the deal with ignoring or minimizing the openness of the border or the manner in which we enforce our laws on the border, it only impedes those that are trying to do the job. And I understand now there's a horse patrol unit that was involved in the media craze last week or 2 weeks ago that are now, you know, on the sidelines until things are sorted out and investigated. Well, who does that help? That's an asset that now sits idle, that is not patrolling the border. So I am humane. I am the son of an immigrant. I want people to present their cases and their claims. We have refugee status. We have temporary protected status that was recently granted to the Haitians, that community, that our country and Secretary Mayorkas, who I actually have met and I actually have great respect for. I think he's well suited for the position, as he's an immigrant himself from Cuba, a family that had to flee Cuba many decades ago. So I do believe that at the agency level and department level, we have got the right folks in place. But when it turns into like a political football with people that can get a little bit of, you know, one-upsmanship on each other by just taking a momentary snapshot or video that perhaps was taken out of context and making a rush to judgment, it demoralizes those folks that are on the border. And by the way, it's not the most hospitable location in the United States. These border posts are very remote in many cases, not necessarily in a city like Del Rio, but spread out. And now when they have a sense that folks don't have their back, you know, for not doing something, you know, that they weren't trained to do, that, you know, certainly if you step out of bounds and don't, you know, work in the manner that you were trained at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, which the Border Patrolmen have trained at, as well as in Artesia, New Mexico. They do all they can to be the best that they can be. And my fear, my concern is not political. I'm not a political person. It's just, as an American citizen, you know, we got to have some rule of law. And that's where I think we get away from when we get into these emotions that make it appear that we're, you know, perhaps heavy-handed along the border.
It's a trickle-down demoralization. I mean, like you're saying, without investigating the situation, people jumped on it, and the optics of it were bad from internationally. I mean, you look at it; it looks, oh yeah, some guy on a horse is. It looks like whipping somebody, right? Well, we look into it. No, he's not. He's whipping his horse. He's moving his horse around. It's just, it appears as one thing, and it's not. But the impact there beyond the border, it trickles down to places like Chicago and impacts the things that John and I talk about on this podcast all the time, the things that are eroding the south side and the west side of this city and are forcing people, mostly minorities, to flee the city for better pastures. Can you speak to some of that? Because I don't think people really understand how much of impact, and it's not just the people coming across the border, it's the illegal goods, the drugs, the weaponry, the things of that nature that are trafficked by cartels and gangs that impact this at a much higher rate than anything of someone trying to come here to flee violence in their home country.
Exactly, as is the case even in the U.S. citizenry, there's always a criminal element that is not, you know, an enormous number ratio, just as, you know, percentage wise as it is with us U.S. citizens, but it does exist and it has to be dealt with. Smuggling organizations will smuggle anything for profit, and that includes people, products, whether it's contraband narcotics or even just intellectual property right violations, like, you know, the knockoffs that come across from anywhere, including other countries, not just the southern countries, but they'll smuggle anything. And then once it gets past the port of entry, you know, where we have inspectors, you know, uniformed, that are actually there when you present yourself and show your passports or your documents if you're cargo, or the border patrolman that will prevent you from entering and ideally direct you to ports of entry, then you're in the United States. Now it's very difficult. Now we have to almost start all over, especially if you snuck in without inspection. Now we have to see what's going on in, let's deal with Chicago, urban areas for the most part. they're going to come in and they're going to, you know, when they smuggle in folks, people don't realize, you know, a lot of these folks aren't able to pay their smuggling fees right away. You know, they'll make an agreement, get me to America, and whatever the amount is, X amount, 5,000 or 50,000, whatever it is, they're not able to pay. So in many cases, they become what they become human trafficked. They become enslaved. They have to work off their smuggling fees and work in these industries. That's the cleaner side. It's horrific, but that's not necessarily violent crime or anything. It is for those folks, especially if they're working within the prostitution field, et cetera, or working just in, I don't want to name an industry, but in every industry, it's horrific, but we don't see it. It's almost like a blind crime. Then you get to the ones that are, that we do see and feel, usually involving narcotics or guns, and which is a violent business that they compete the cartels with one another right here in our backyard, right in Chicago. So in the federal agencies, don't have limitless resources. The entire agency that I work for only has thousands of criminal investigators, and they have to sort out what's going on. And how do they do that? They work with local and state police agencies, who are the first ones to encounter and usually interdict or arrest, you know, folks at the lowest levels of these cartels, of these operations. Our job at the federal level is to identify that, dismantle that organization, wipe out their assets by seizing all their funds wherever we can identify them in one fell swoop. We have the luxury of time at the federal level to do that over a year or two or even 3 years of an investigation. But the folks on the front lines, like the Chicago PD, Cook County Sheriffs, all the PDs in the Metro Chicagoland area, they are unfamiliar with what they're up against. And we work together for years, for decades. That collaboration has dissipated in the last years, primarily because of the emotion that's involved with it. Criminal aliens, I'd like to think that we could all agree, is something that we can all agree on need to be, you know, dealt with and ultimately removed from the country if they're not eligible to be here. But that no longer is a consensus, in my opinion. And I think folks are getting the larger emotion of just the whole immigration, you know, crisis at the borders as a humanitarian crisis and leaving out the criminal element. And also, why was the Department of Homeland Security created in the first place? Ideally, you know, because we never want to have a 9/11 again and prevent that from happening. So with all that said and all that in mind, this is the stress that your border management agencies go through every day at the front lines and in the interior, like the offices that I worked in. So yes, there is an impact to criminal activity by non-Americans that can be dealt with better if we collaborate. So depending on, you know, the flavor of the day and the moment, you know, the attitudes of the moment, you know, we're able to do that very efficiently, or we have to do it on our own without cooperation from the local and state agencies.
I'll give you an example. All of you who are listening, his name was Dennis McCann. Denny McCann, a White Sox fan, walking across the street, Logan Boulevard, the old neighborhood where I lived, hit by a car, dragged under the car for a quarter mile, dead. The driver, Saul Chavez, had 0.29 blood alcohol level. That's pretty drunk. And that was the second offense. Second drunk driving offense for Mr. Chavez. But he was suspected of being an illegal alien, or what am I supposed to call it now? Whatever I'm supposed to call it, undocumented worker. And he was put in jail. And Tony Preckwinkle and Congressman Chuy Garcia pushed through a deal where they would not, where the jail would not notify INS when INS wanted a hold on somebody. So he made bail and he walked. He fled to Mexico. He killed a man, or allegedly killed a man, while drunk, and he just walked. And that's the consequence of what we're doing, I think. Tell me if I'm wrong, Pat. If I'm wrong, please tell me.
No, you know, again, there's an issue there with, you know, criminals bonding out that I hear on Chicago media often, especially lately. And And that needs to be addressed, certainly, with Americans or non-Americans or non-U.S. citizens, as they're called nowadays. So the issue of not cooperating with us when our agencies will, the best and safest place to identify these folks are while they're incarcerated through the good work of local and state law enforcement. They don't have weapons on them. They're in a safe place. We're in a safe place, and we can identify, are they a non-American and are they eligible for removal from the United States? Because that's basically all that goes on. So, with folks that are incarcerated, they're removed. They're sent back. It's a flight or a ride home that the U.S. government pays for. And then there's no guarantee that they're not going to just come right back the next day, which in many cases they do. The penalties for those situations, though, are risen to the federal level, where just for returning as a criminal alien, a person that was convicted of a crime or felony in the United States, removed from the United States, and then chose to return, again, sneaking in somewhere. Now they've upped the level to where the federal level does try to prosecute those cases, and then they actually get serious time, depending on the area of the country that they're in, the courts that they're going through. So, but it takes so many, strikes and bites at the apple to get to that level. So frustrating to many Americans who are victims of crime, like the McCann family, is this process, between the courts locally and then even, us federally in being able to identify and apprehend and at the very least, get these folks on record, remove them, because it's much more helpful, especially the gentleman in that case that perhaps has not been interdicted by us. We have no knowledge of him. We don't have fingerprints necessarily. They do now with the Cook County Jail, if he was in there. But every delay, every hurdle that we have to jump over impedes our ability to deal with, folks that have a criminal background. DUI is often a touchy one because folks don't consider that perhaps, that's a serious offense, not worth deporting a person that who was here with permission for many years. And our challenge and our fear was always, what about the next DUI? What about the third one, the fourth one? What about the time that it takes to get to the person that they actually kill while they were drunk, kind of like the McCann family experience? So again, complicated topics that involve local, state, and federal level synchronization in the process. And it all starts with, on the immigration front, not the agencies that enforce these things, but the laws on the books. If there's any challenges or updates that need to be made or frustration, take that out or take that up with your representatives, including here locally at the federal level, your Congress folks, your senators, and then also in the DC arena, because it's not really an administration's fault for the condition that we're in small 4-year bites. This challenge has devolved since the Reagan era, when President Reagan last tried to deal with the immigration laws. And again, amnesty in that case, way back, many decades ago, did not prevent another 10 to 15 million folks coming to this country without permission and in an illegal manner and just refilling the bowl all over again. So it's a tough challenge for anyone. Perhaps why they don't want to take it up is, what is the answer? What is the solution to our immigration laws that will help minimize all these negative impacts that come with it? Many positive impacts for sure with immigration and welcoming refugees and the entire Afghan crisis, for example, recently. Happy to do it, but let's do it properly. So again, it's a difficult. You're not wrong. There's no wrong or right. It's the totality of the circumstances, case by case basis. But the system that does allow folks to kind of just walk away and disappear, it's painful, not just to the families, but to the law enforcement officers that put their best efforts behind the case.
The thing you mentioned to Jeff's question about human trafficking and drug trafficking and fentanyl and all that, when you have when you have law that's not enforced, or let's say that's not enforced by the federal authority, and like sanctuary cities, and you have all that nonsense, all that leads to a sort of lawlessness that that victimizes people. I'm thinking of all these girls and young men who come across the border that don't have the money to pay their trafficker or their cartel. What are they? Are they locked in some sort of slavery? I mean, even in this country, where they're afraid they have to work for the cartel boss and or whoever the
the employment boss is? Are they stuck?
In many cases, they are. And it's not just cartels in the Central and South American region. It's every country does this, including the Asian countries that will help folks get to this country, come to terms with whatever that's going to cost, and then spend unknown, uncertain amount of time basically enslaved, working in restaurants or their industries, paying off those debts, but perhaps also incurring debts as they have housing provided because they're smuggled here and they don't have any documentation or their passports are being held by these folks. And they don't even know when that end date is, when they're basically going to have their debts paid, because they're getting bills added to their debt for housing, for example, while they're all being billeted in small apartments or small houses. So it's a never ending situation for many of them. And it's something that we take with great seriousness. And we have an entire organization and group that does nothing but focus on it and work with local and state police officers, in a sense, freeing these folks, that aren't even right. supposed to be here, aren't here with permission.
Okay, Pat. We have this open border, or whatever we want to call it, down there. People are coming in from all countries. We got that Afghanistan issue where I don't know how many tens of thousands of Afghanis were airlifted who didn't have special immigration visas. They just came in. How do you stop terrorists from coming across the border from the south? What do you do?
Well, you got to work with the nations that, it's not a mission that you can do alone. You work with coalition partners to identify these folks. Luckily, with biometrics nowadays, in many cases, folks will have some record of wherever they came from, to include even within the churches or some places for many centuries. There's no community, there's no office, civil offices, but there might be baptismal records and things of that sort. So I'm very confident in all our agencies, from the local to the federal level, that will do all they can to exhaust all leads, find out who is this person in front of them, and not allow somebody that they're not thoroughly vetted into the United States, that they have encountered, that they're actually able to inspect. So it's not a perfect science, but we have a national intel community that is much more in tune with what goes on in the domestic realm, via the FBI. And that's another difficult job, because America is a nation of freedoms and we don't want Big Brother watching us. So all these challenges are rolled up into, how do we make sure somebody that's not coming in here is a terrorist, especially across the border? The good news is most terrorists don't want to walk across these desolate lands and suffer that agony trying to get in, especially when they're very vulnerable if interdicted, if caught. The 9/11 folks had visas issued. They came right through an airport and we taught them how to fly. So those type concerns are greatly, there's a great amount of tension placed on anybody, any applicant that's coming through nowadays. So I'm very confident in our, it's been 20 years since we've had anything of significance, that our systems in place that cannot remain static, that are dynamic, that have to kind of adapt with the challenges that we see on the horizon, as you hear that term often. So I'm very much more confident that we're no longer trapped between the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean and just looking at the 5-meter target. Our government, especially at the federal level, is constantly looking at what's over the horizon. So working with all their coalition partners in that regard, and with automation and the improvement in computer and technology in the last two decades as compared to 2001, I'm very confident that, we're pretty good. The fear is, one, it only takes one for sure, but we're very good at staying focused and working with the interagency process that really was a problem 20 years ago. So along the border, yes, could that happen? Could someone just walk in and hide behind a cactus tree and walk and make it in? It is possible, but is it probable? And the answer is no. And then again, it's not just the Border Patrol that are there. Folks tend to stand out in those areas in the Southwest if they don't belong. So we're very lucky. Americans are all participating in this Homeland Security initiative now in the last few decades. And it's not just the few guys that are standing along the border. So I would say, let's not, get folks concerned over that. It's a constant mission that everyone's aware of, handled while you're trying to also let in folks that are supposed to get in, and cargo and commerce and business as well that needs to travel in and out of the border areas. So it's definitely a challenge, but there are so many folks on that nowadays that I can tell you that it's much, much, much more confident of success than perhaps, you know, 20 years ago when we kind of let our guard down.
There was this perception and kind of vilification of like ICE in cities across the country, you know, in the last few years. Some people calling them like stormtroopers, or, you know, giving them secret police.
Yeah.
And my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that they're not hunters. They're not going out like looking for people just to be, hey, who are you? It's more, hey, we're looking for this person, or we're looking for an explicit person. We've got information. We've been working towards this moment. This is the last mile of an investigation to get somebody. Am I wrong in that, or are ICE agents around the country just, you know, milling around, patrolling, looking for people doing bad things?
No, you're absolutely correct. There's as I mentioned, 10 to 15 million folks. Do you know how much effort it would take to apprehend all those folks and remove them financially, paying for airline tickets? It's not going to be done ever. The focus is on, starts with the violent criminals and work your way down. Usually anyone that's that encounters law enforcement in a negative way. You know, folks, the common thing is, you know, there's a fear of if folks cannot call and deal with the police, you know, because they fear deportation, then, you know, that's why we don't want our local police agencies to work with the vilified, you know, ICE stormtroopers. We are so offended by that in our agency. We are veterans. We served in our military. Many of us served. We were Boy Scouts. We were raised in Christian and all types of churches. The people that work in these agencies are not villains. Let's start with that. They're fact-finding professional investigators or immigration enforcement officers that have to pursue folks that have gone through the process and have been ordered removed from the United States. They don't use the term deported anymore. Now it's removed. And we'll do everything we can to make this a gentler, softer process, because it is a humane process in this country. We're the most fair nation on earth. There has to be a rule of law, and there is a division that does have to, you know, seek out folks that have been ordered removed from the United States and have disappeared. And there's a division within that. Within the criminal investigations, the special agents in the agency, they're the only ones that conduct these criminal investigations at these cartels or these ongoing crimes that are being committed. And in the conduct of those investigations, they'll encounter folks that are part and parcel of it, that perhaps are on the sidelines and on the edges of it, and perhaps they're scooped up in the process as well as part of a criminal investigation. But there is absolutely many, many millions of folks that have entered this country that have not entered with permission, that have not, you know, had encounters with law enforcement, you know, via committing crimes themselves or anything negative, that can still interact with law enforcement, who will not ask them what their immigration status is. And they never have. They don't have that authority, and they don't want that authority. So those folks are still able to, you know, provide information and testimony if need be without fear of removal of the United States. So if you go back to what I said earlier, the percentage of criminal activity and even criminals, although heightened in an urban area, you know, where we are in Chicago, and that's all we hear about on a daily basis, is no greater from what I've read and studied over the many decades than in any other, you know, ethnicity or country. It's just every nation has bad apples. So this fear, this sense of making it seem like we're going to come out and just knock on every door and basically card everybody that we encounter is false. And it's, again, sensationalized from perhaps political gain or purposes that none of these agencies or these agents or immigration enforcement officers appreciate. They're doing a good job that they believe, and we believe, and I always believed, helps improve public safety.
There's nothing perhaps about it, Pat. The vilification of those border agents on horseback, most of them Latinos, and trying to compare them to slave traders or overseers is the same. Is the same political left. Sorry to get political on you, but it's the same left that Jeff referenced that compares immigration officials to stormtroopers. It's the same type of thing. It's all about shutting down debate so that you can keep, you can open the borders wide open, bring in whoever you want, and no consequences. And if they kill, if they kill somebody, if they kill somebody in a crime and get to leave without being, without paying their debt to society, that's okay. They don't care.
And there is a mechanism in place that I believe is frustrating the McCann family in the case you explained earlier is, you know, we work through our attaché offices and our American embassies with the countries that host us to actually extradite those folks. But we cannot force them. We have no authority once you leave the United States to make anything happen. It's just, you know, it's a ballet dance that, you know, if they ignore many of these extradition requests, then perhaps, you know, the U.S. can impose sanctions or make trade more difficult. There are ways to get things that you want, and it's a constant negotiation overseas. So you're right. I feel everyone's frustration as I worked in this field for 3 decades, and I can see the emotion, and I hate to see the divisiveness. And again, I'm not saying that it's not a political issue, and I just want everyone to understand that I am not a political person. I am a proud retiree now, but a law enforcement officer, love my country, love my government, no matter who's at the helm, because yes. In America, we can, you know, worst case it switch out in 8 years, no matter who's in. So that's a phenomenal look at the nations around the world that do not enjoy that democracy, that freedom. But the divisiveness I see within this immigration argument, and especially, you know, vilifying the border patrolmen, you know, in a hasty, unprofessional manner, you know, an agency, by the way, that is the most diverse, over 50% minorities in that agency by itself, mostly Hispanic, but to kind of vilify them and describe them perhaps, or bring back memories, which is also unfair to those folks that suffered through slavery or the families that continue to this day. Let's stick with apples to apples when we discuss issues and problems in this nation. But it starts at the top. Our immigration laws do not matter if they're not enforced. So if there's a problem with enforcement or the removal of folks that perhaps you don't want removed, change it or change the terminology. If you don't want to call a person an alien anymore, which is now the case because it sounds offensive, perhaps change it. Change it in the legislature. But don't make the agencies, the law enforcement officers, the border patrolmen, and the interior enforcement officers the villains, because they continue to march as they were trained, as they were resourced, and as the law allows for. Don't beat up on them. And that's the part that's most disheartening. And again, I'm not trying to pick one administration over another. I want people to listen to this podcast and understand that there are professionals that stay out of the politics that actually work in government that can do that. And I was one of them. And I'm surrounded by many, many peers and colleagues, to include the Border Patrol inspectors at the airports, you know, and seaports and land ports. It's a team. It's a family team that think they're doing right by America, you know, making America great always, not just again. So to watch this hysteria and frustration with the whole immigration topic is difficult for those of us that are not allowed to really, you know, speak or defend ourselves, basically. So I'm not here to make a political statement today. I just want to clarify that we do have a decent government and decent agencies that administer humane laws. But if you ignore them, then it turns into anarchy.
On that note, I can't think of a better guest to talk about this with than you, Pat, a frontliner, supervisor. You're not playing a political game. You're just trying to explain to people what happens. And I really, truly, and I know Jeff does as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Appreciate your thoughtfulness and your
perspective, really.
Perspective, yeah.
Yeah, thank you both for the opportunity to help clarify what perhaps isn't really described properly on, through the media. I'm not vilifying the media either, but things in a snapshot never really give you the full context of a story.
There's nothing like snapshots and emotion to herd the livestock or the voters.
Correct. To shape the environment.
There you go. Pat, thanks for being here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you for being here. Talk to you again.
My pleasure.
I hope. That was a great talk with Pat Dickinson, wasn't it? I mean, I guess, you know, he's our guest and we're having this podcast, and I say great talk, but I really enjoyed it, Jeff. I really thought that a neutral law enforcement perspective with all this noise and screaming and the lies about Border Patrol whips and slavery and all that nonsense, political crap. I thought it was good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had some actual perspective on it that's value. I mean, of value, not just people who are thousands of miles away and just seeing what everyone else is seeing and then responding to it. Because, you know,
there's nothing like pundits who never rode a horse with soft hands and soft butts telling you how to ride a horse when you're working, a working horse.
Exactly.
Now, we've got some announcements to make here.
Well, we do.
Yeah. I'm getting calls from people who want to help us along on the Chicago Way journey. So we'll see. We'll have to talk about that privately, I guess. Not sure. Jeff's like, wait a minute. What are you going to announce?
Yeah, I don't know. That was me. You made me perk up for sure.
But I am accepting commentary on the Chicago Way. We got another, on johncastnews.com, we have another guest column coming soon from another newsman, Jay Levine. And maybe I'll get Dan Proft to write about his epic trout fishing adventure. So
that'd be cool. I'd love to hear that more about Tim and his trout excursion.
Yeah, he was having a Brad Pitt moment, and Steve the pilot and I were teasing him because he showed us a fish that was like maybe as long as a thumb. And then he showed us a nice one that was really a pretty rainbow. I mean, a beautiful rainbow.
Nice.
So we got that going. And, well, that's it for this week.
Yeah. We've got another podcast coming in over the weekend. The great Milt Rosenberg's son has a new book out about Chicago and some interesting stuff there. We walked the streets and lived in areas and talked to people and...
What next, Chicago? Notes of a pissed off native son. Yeah, so. I can't wait for that. So we want to thank all of you. And for Pat Dickinson, almost 30 years, an INS officer and supervisor, former U.S. Army Ranger and intelligence officer in Afghanistan, Kabul, Iraq. A Boston Italian kid with an Irish-sounding name. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN Radio, my friend, co-host here, Master Baker, owner of Three Cats. And for me, is it Three Cats, Jeff, I hope?
Yes, mostly three cats, yeah.
Three Cats. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, friend, and I guess property of Zeus the Wonder Dog, proprietor at johncastnews.com. Thanks for joining us on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.